Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. Hello, welcome back. Here we are with a brand new episode for our selected special listeners. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society, and this is episode 34 for May 2016. We have prepared a great menu for our audience. We have a central interview with Professor Curio from Reutlingen University in Germany to talk about autonomous vehicles, intention prediction, driver's attention estimation, and a lot more exciting hot research topics in our field. Don't miss it, you'll learn a thing or two. That interview was brilliantly conducted by our great volunteer, Dr. Kavishkar. We also have our usual contents, a transportation and history mini section with a very interesting review of centuries 16th to 20th by Mehran Shirazi, and a lovely review on the book titled Cooperative Vehicle Communications in the Drive-Through Internet by Professor Eren. All of this prepared with all our goodwill for our precious community. So let's start!
Transportation in History by Mehran Shirazi, PhD candidate at Simon Fraser University, Canada. In episode 33, we reviewed the timeline of transportation technology from the beginning up to the 16th century. We continue reviewing the history of transportation from that century to the 21st century. In 16th century, transportation was still uncomfortable and very slow. Lo forced men to spend some days repairing roads which were still just dirt tracks. People traveled by horse. They could either ride their own horse or hire one. At those days, if you could travel 50 kilometers a day, you were considered lucky. However, rich people deliberately traveled slowly. It was considered undignifying to hurry. Goods were transported by horses with bags on their sides. However, when possible, people preferred to transport goods by water. 17th century started with the invention of the world's first known submarine by Cornelius Drebbel. This submarine was propelled by oars. In 1635, people could pay King George's messengers to carry their letters. This was the start of the Royal Mail. From the middle of the 17th century, stagecoaches ran regularly between the major towns in England. However, they were very expensive, and without springs on rough roads, they must have been very uncomfortable. In 1662, Blaise Pascal invented a horse-drawn public bus which had a regular route, schedule, and fare system. 10 years later, Ferdinand Verbies built the first steam-powered car in the history. Transportation was greatly improved during the 18th century. Travelers started to pay tolls for improving and maintenance of roads. Transporting goods was also made much easier by digging canals. These canals played a major role in the Industrial Revolution by making it cheaper to transport goods. At the end of the century, in France, the Montgolfier brothers invented the hot air balloon in 1783. In the same year, the first hydrogen balloon was also launched. Turtle, the first military submarine to attempt an attack on a ship, was also made in this century. The attack failed to sink the HMS Eagle. The first self-propelled road vehicle was invented by Nicolas Joseph Cugnot in 1769. We talked about this vehicle in details in the previous episodes of the podcast. At the end of this century, modern bicycles were invented. You will hear about the invention in the upcoming episodes. In the mid-19th century, transportation was revolutionized by railways. They made travel much faster and safer. The first underground railway in Britain was built in London in 1863. Steam locomotives pulled the carriages. The first electric underground trains began running in London in 1890. The first gasoline engine automobile was invented by Jean Lenoir in 1862. 5 years later, the first motorcycle was invented. Carl Benz and Gottlieb Daimler made the first cars in 1885 and 1886. Also, in the 1880s, the safety bicycle was invented, and cycling soon became a popular hobby. Meanwhile at sea, 19th century transportation was revolutionized by the steamship. By 1815, steamships were crossing the English Channel. Furthermore, it used to take several weeks to cross the Atlantic. Then, in 1838, steamship called the Sirius made the journey in 19 days. However, steam did not completely replace sail until the end of 19th century when the steam turbine was used on ships. Many more exciting events related to transportation happened in the 20th and 21st centuries. Some of them are invention of airplane by Wright brothers in 1903, Ford assembly line in 1908, liquid-propelled rocket in 1926, modern helicopters in 1940, supersonic jet flight in 1947, hovercraft in 1956, bullet train in 1964, manned mission to the moon in 1969, jumbo jet in 1970, space shuttle in 1981, high-speed maglev train in 2004, and ultra-personal rapid transit in 2010. In order to hear about these and many more innovations in transportations, follow our podcasts.
This is the book review section for the present issue of YTS podcast, reviewed by Dr. Haluk Eren, Fırat University, Elazığ, Turkey. The book title is Cooperative Vehicular Communications in the Drive-Thru Internet and consists of 82 pages, produced by Springer in 2015. The authors are Haibo Chou, Lin Yi, Kuom Yeo, and Shamin Shen. In near future, vehicle drivers will presumably establish ubiquitous connectivity with the roadside Wi-Fi access points. Therefore, IEEE 802.11 networks will play a significant role in traffic stream. This monograph presents an analytical scheme for drive-thru internet performance and handles theory for optimal connectivity. Drive-thru internet exposes serious limitations for the wireless access performance and its service quality in associated applications like downloading data and streaming video due to vehicle mobility, insufficient wireless channels and access point coverage, and also the issues stemming from IEEE 802.11 MAC that is originally designed for stationary requirements. Underlying issue draws global interest by researchers. The results for exchanging vehicular content provide a broad perspective for Wi-Fi-based vehicular communications and performance enhancements. This brief consists of 5 chapters. In Chapter 1 and 2, authors introduce preliminaries of cooperative drive-thru internet, including basic concepts and research challenges. Subsequently, provide an overview for related works. In Chapter 3, a framework is proposed to elaborate the drive-thru internet performance in the outdoor vehicular environment. It includes many different vehicular traffic flow states and is compatible with IEEE 802.11 networks with distributed coordination function. In Chapter 4, authors introduce Chain Cluster, a cooperative drive-through internet scheme supporting effective vehicular content distribution. The performance of Chain Cluster is shown by simulations. Finally, in Chapter 5, some future research directions are available for cooperative vehicular communications. Existing chapters of the book are supported by relevant theory, and the highlighted matters are sketched by descriptive figures. A comprehensive overview and comments on the research literature are provided at the end of each chapter. Researchers and professionals interested in vehicular networks will find this book a useful reference. As a final word, I would like to recall my colleagues Mustafa Kaya, Mahmut Ormanoğlu, İhsan Asutay, Emin Yıldız and Yılmaz Tökü. I'm immensely grateful to them all for building a little recording studio for ITS podcast.
In If you are a regular at the ITS Society-sponsored conferences, you will probably know Professor Cristobal Curio. He's a great contributor for them, organizing interesting workshops and publishing exciting research. So get comfortable for this one, it is worth your attention. We hope you enjoy it.
Our guest today is Professor Cristobal Curio from the Hermann Hollerich Center at the Computer Science Department of Reutlingen University in Germany. He is professor for computer science with focus on cognitive systems and computer vision research. He is involved in the Computer Science Master's Program, Human-Centered Computing. Besides performing research in this area, he teaches this and other topics like foundations in mathematics for computer scientists and man-machine interfaces and simulation topics. While he is active in the automotive field, his research contributes also to other disciplines, but in general to assistance systems. In the field of cognitive systems, his group develops applications based on computer vision, machine learning, and computer graphics in combination with methods for modeling human cognitive processes. Professor Curio is a very active volunteer at the ITS Society. For example, he is running the workshop on holistic interfaces for environmental fusion models to be programmed in the next IEEE Symposium on Intelligent Vehicles in Gothenburg, Sweden. Hello, Professor Curio. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, Marianne. First of all, thank you for inviting me to this interview. Well, regarding myself, I have been professor for computer science at Reutlingen University now since 2014. The focus of our research is reflected by topics on, as you said, cognitive systems. Now, we are a team of very young, talented researchers eager to do innovative research on various related research topics all around cognitive systems. As you know, cognitive systems is a timely topic. It requires a very interdisciplinary approach, and it consists of more, I think, than a single discipline and offers a chance to look both at technical and human aspects of cognition, well, let's say, on an equal ratio. In other words, we try to look at things in a human-centered way, which is also expressed through our new master course, Human-Centered Computing, where my colleagues and I educate our computer scientist students from the very beginning to think in an interdisciplinary way and prepare them to do independent and innovative research. Before joining Reutlingen University, I have been and still am very active on automotive research topics, mostly in computer vision. During my time in automotive industry, I have been involved in developing vision solutions for major German OEMs like Daimler, where I contributed to new navigation algorithms for autonomous cars based on serious vision sensors. So far, I have also been very active in participating in European research projects in robotics and human-machine interfaces. One of my research interests that has driven many research quests so far is monocular purposeful computer vision. This topic has sparked my interest since the beginning of my PhD work in the mid-90s at the Institute for Neuroinformatics at the Ruhr University Bochum, where my mentors have been Professor Werner von Seelen and Professor Martin Giese. Martin Giese is a colleague actually in Tübingen and a specialist on human action perception and control. One of the lessons I learned is that complex problems can be approached with appropriate learning and by framing problems in a general sense. The inspirations that the study and the modeling of biological systems, that's what most of the research in that lab were about, offers is that biological systems at first sight can emulate complex behavior, but can often be explained also with a few computational, let's say, simple principles. In my own research, I was developing a system architecture that was able to reconstruct, for example, even monocularly, human poses based solely on monocular vision cues learned from appropriate amounts of data that I simulated. This kind of approach I implemented together with Martin Giese and has led finally through the last couple of years to one of the most well-known products in entertainment industry, the Microsoft Kinect. At the same time when I developed such an approach, automotive companies were still looking at topics like pedestrian detection. Today we all agree, I think, on the need to know more about pedestrians in order to predict what a pedestrian likely is doing in the near future, a topic that has been coined attention prediction. It is quite a challenge ahead of us, I think, considering the fact that pedestrians can be very spontaneous and the observation from a moving platform could be very prone to errors. At the Max Planck Institute for Biological Cybernetics in Tübingen, Germany, I spent about 10 years of my postdoc time. It is a very good place, especially having been in the department of Professor Bülthoff, that offered me the chance to collaborate with many interesting researchers from many disciplines and building up my own research group, which I called Cognitive Engineering. I think that was rather exotic, as being an electrical engineer by training and researcher in computer science with experience in research questions of autonomous driving, to settle in at a Max Planck research lab for basic brain science. But it was my clear intention, and I saw a chance to bring in my computational engineering aspects to an institute that was investigating the brain as a black box despite its long-lasting history studying neurophysiology of the fly's eye. As such, I think it was a chance to drive topics in more interdisciplinary ways than I could do before during my PhD. Even also offered me the chance to work on questions how the human brain works, like how we perceive, for example, dynamic facial expressions, developing our own simulators and technologies with a team of engineers, computer scientists, and psychologists. I continue doing research with the institute till today. In my current position, I am now a research professor at Reutlingen University. Reutlingen University is a university of applied science and is very close located to my former working place, Tübingen, and is located in the heart of Germany's southern automotive industry, in the Stuttgart area, at the rim of the so-called Swabian Alp. At this very international and research-oriented applied university, I am currently building up a teaching and research program that encompasses many research topics. Further, I am working on new research facilities for human motion tracking, allowing me to develop human-centered aspects. Having both access to groundbreaking research results and methods, and being embedded into regional and over-regional industry collaborations, I'm happy to take on the role of doing both close-to-industry research while at the same time transferring latest basic research results into technology. In my opinion, this commitment to research and technology transfer is actually required when trying to merge technical and human senses in an optimal fashion, which is a major goal in our research lab at Reutlingen University.
Thank you, Cristobal. Could you talk a little bit about that workshop you are organizing? What is its focus?
Yes. On this year's Intelligent Vehicle Symposium, I am organizing a workshop together with Dr. Michael Schilling from the German automotive supplier Hella. In general, we want to promote the discussion about all kinds of interfaces related to an environmental fusion model of an autonomous car, and want to show how standardization and different levels actually can help to reduce the time until autonomous vehicles become reality on our streets. Related to this workshop idea that I recently joined a larger nationally funded research project consortium, which is under coordination again of Hella. In particular, it is led by Dr. Schilling. The research project is called OFP, and the letters stand for Open Fusion Platform. The project was kicked off in January this year, and the official webpage with whom we announce these days, if you are interested for more information. Our IV workshop is named Holistic Interfaces for Environmental Fusion Models. Like in this new research project, our workshop wants to promote to a larger ITS audience research on holistic interfaces. For this, we gathered cutting-edge experts presenting interesting use cases and methodologies to realize them. So what does this mean? We all agree that there are now many complex driver assistance functions, and many more that could potentially soon enter cars. Yet, interoperability among different sensors, functionalities, and related to that, automotive safety aspects are still lacking. For example, sensors in the beginning of a typical processing chain can yet not be easily exchanged. Further, their fusion for various purposes currently looks very promising. Looking at the huge impact of learning has, new functionalities will soon, I think, be possible in the new future, offering new ways of exploiting current technologies. As such, we realize the necessity to start working on holistic interfaces from a bird's eye view, having both research labs and many strong industry partners on board. For our planned workshop, we are glad to be able to present a bunch of interesting speakers. For example, we have a presentation from Daimler's localization research team. Further, researchers from Bosch and from the Autonomous Systems Lab at ETH Zurich, who have both been working on recently accomplished recharge project, present interesting topics. Since we are in Sweden this year, we are very happy to have also a contribution on sensor fusion aspects on automotive safety co-authored by Volvo. And last but not least, we have considered also current aspects of human behavior analysis in urban areas, where we touch interesting topics on aim intention prediction of pedestrians, like new work from Bosch R&D and some work by ourselves.
Cristobal, reading this workshop summary and also another one you co-organized last year during ITSC 2015 in Las Palmas, it looks like these days the prediction of intentions is a really hot topic. It looks like the sooner we know what are the humans in the system doing next, the sooner we, as the automated vehicle, can react to avoid any dangerous situation. Can you really predict with a decent accuracy the intention of pedestrians beside the road? What are the cues you pick? Can you please put an example for it?
This is a really good question. Myself, I've been trying hard to define what intention prediction actually means and what it encompasses, given the complexity of potential behaviors we do observe in natural environments. Not only the stereotypical ones we all are thinking of, like observing somebody beginning to cross the road, for example. I think the meaning of the outcome of a certain type of movement very much depends on the impact it has on the current goals and planned trajectories of the observing moving platform, be it autonomous or be it a normally driven car. Good models for controlling this risk and judging how accurate we need to resolve or predict the outcomes of observed human behavior is an open research problem. Linear models work, but pedestrians do not behave really linearly. Technology, especially models in computer vision, allowing to estimate important visual cues, at least in the near field, have largely improved over the last couple of years. That will certainly help allowing to make predictions about pedestrians' behavior. This technology would depend on the employed models used to interpret the data and potentially also the resolution of the sensing cameras. Observing pedestrians from a moving platform makes the interpretation even more difficult. local motion cues, for example limb movement, can only be interpreted correctly if the ego motion of the observing, potentially autonomous, platform can be eliminated correctly, or the scene context around the spotted pedestrian is localizable with decent accuracy, which will provide the system the opportunity to better infer the goal of a particular action. As you can see, there's no simple answer to your question. But there are hints from different research directions that actually will find a framework to more systematically provide an answer. The computer and robotics, so the computer vision and robotics community, for example, is continuously providing information to that field. That will likely also influence developments in the more challenging open environments we face for autonomous driving, especially in urban areas. They study, for example, complex hand-object interactions, the behavior of crowds, and even socially aware robot navigation capabilities in, well, human crowds. There are only a few works now by Daimler and BMW, for example, trying to determine the necessary predictive cues for action prediction in order to potentially reduce reaction time of a moving platform. Recent work of Dario Gavrila from Daimler, for example, looked into the coordination of head and torso visual cues. Former work done together of Dario Gavrila with Christoph Keller tried to predict whether the pedestrian will cross or not based on static form and dynamic motion cues that they extracted with the help of computer vision. Those works were partly inspired from behavioral and psychological experiments, for example by Professor Ferber, who systematically varied the presence of visual cues in videos to determine the importance for human pedestrian intention prediction at street curbs, for example. Surprisingly, not much more research has been done in this experimental area in this context since then. Yet, this kind of research might tell us that visual cues to detect might actually be necessary for good prediction. Certainly, stronger technical predictive components are needed. Insights from empirical psychological research may actually inform technical developments what cues to focus on, but without guarantee that the investigated parameters are technically relevant. Certainly, we could extend this empirical work. In my opinion, important work has recently been carried out and points into useful directions. The work studies the ecological advantage of action that I'm referring to, of action recognition in the visual periphery of the human visual field. Action recognition in human visual periphery is a largely understudied problem, but I think of high relevance, because we all rely on it when we drive. There's recent work that was performed at the Max Planck Institute in Tübingen by my former working place. These experiments were conducted by a former postdoc of my group at Max Planck. His name is Stefan de la Rosa, who is running now his own group, and his PhD student Laura Fadenricht. That work has been published recently in the Journal of Vision and is entitled Action Recognition in the Visual Periphery. Major insights were: humans can recognize actions in the periphery remarkably well, even when actions are presented at 40 degrees away from the line of sight. Participants are able to recognize them as well as when directly looking at them, so to speak, perceiving them in their fovea. Interesting is, this is much better than what is usually observed with normal object perception. So does the dynamic information in the action cause better recognition? As I just mentioned, dynamic information was exploited so far for computer vision purposes. To examine this, the authors of this work I am referring to presented a typical peak frame of the action with the same result. Participants still recognize them at 40 degrees as well as when directly looking at them. Hence, this context just points towards the fact that dynamic information is maybe not exploited in such a way we think of. One can speculate that humans are particularly geared for human action, so to say, for evolutionary purposes, distinguish friends from enemy actions, or in our context, to detect whether a pedestrian crosses my trajectory or is doing something else. I think this work is interesting, revealing insights on human brain functions, but it remains currently open how this work can be directly adapted for future system technologies. It is rather interesting that action recognition might be implemented differently across the human visual hemisphere than other for object recognition.
Yes. As I mentioned before, you also participated in the organization of a workshop last year at ITSC 2015. It was titled Interaction of Automated Vehicles with Other Traffic Participants. It included topics as challenging as social interaction modeling. Can you please explain to our listeners what is social interaction when it comes down to pedestrians and all modes of transport?
Your question brings actually up another important topic. The workshop I organized together with Christoph Stiller at ITSC 2015 intended to bring together researchers to see if we are yet technically equipped in order to study something like negotiation about situations. In the ultimate case, a negotiation or communication of an autonomous car with a pedestrian. Related to that, several questions came up. Does the pedestrian know that I, the driver, or the automated system has noticed her or him, or vice versa? I expect eye gaze, for example, something like micro-expressions or typical gestures, necessary to perceive automatically in order to judge real pedestrians' intentions. At least I can argue for the need for social interaction perception for guaranteeing normal traffic flow of autonomous cars in normal urban environments like we experience today. There are several use cases we could think of where deeper gesture understandings of autonomous systems might play a role. Looking again at the psychological literature, including our own, we can speculate that there must be complex interaction recognition functions dedicated to the recognition of social interactions. One important insight is that the meaning of an action is often determined through the interaction of a human with other objects, referring to the goals of human actions, and through the interaction with others. Similar questions we have studied extensively in a finished EU project, which was an EU-fed open project called Tango. It might actually become more complex when looking at interactions between several participants of a scene. The chance, we do not know yet, is that looking at crowds actually could tell us more about the meaning of an individual action, since interactions are to some degree constrained or modulated by the local and global environment, so to speak, the interactors. There is this wording how actually our EU project Tango came up with its name. It takes two to tango. Its main intention was to come up with a mathematical description, a computational model of emotional interactions between humans. Social interaction modeling also plays an important role within the driving cockpit of a car, for example, in order to predict the distraction level of a driver being involved, for example, in a conversation. I've been developing myself with a team a driver distraction model at my former company, TWT GmbH, Science and Innovation, and for which a first conceptual paper we just published. With this model, we want to show that besides movements that an automatic vision system can detect, the audio channel can contribute a lot to the understanding of the current interior situation. It will be worth not just studying single behavior in cars, but also to look at interactive, multimodal social cues with other participants. This encompasses roughly the idea of the workshop held at ITC, that it is worth to think of the future car something like a social entity, while something like a companion.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you. Cristobal, in the 2013 winter issue of the ITS magazine, you published a paper quite in line with all of that. We highly recommend our listeners to read it. It is titled Detectability Prediction for Increased Scene Awareness. That's exciting. In that one, it looks like you went a step behind and forecast if humans will be able to detect pedestrians depending on the current visual conditions. It's like the computer thinking, okay, I detect pedestrians in that zone and this mortal, clumsy human driver is likely not noticing it. Is that so?
Thanks for pointing out that work. Indeed, that was one of the intentions of this approach that my former PhD student David Engel and I have developed at the Max Planck Institute in Tübingen. I'm glad to see that this kind of approach has so far been re-implemented by other research labs, not only for pedestrian detection, but also to determine, for example, whether a traffic sign might have been noticed by a driver or not, depending solely on contextual visual conditions. While this work definitely falls within the area of attention guidance systems, our goal was to build a wrapper around existing object detection systems and to calibrate a machine learning system to predict the perceptibility, or how we called it, the detectability of certain objects. In our case, these were pedestrians. In the beginning, we did not know anything what features were actually relevant for the machine perception part of this approach, allowing to predict users' ability or driver's ability to perceive certain visual information under certain conditions. Yes, with this human-centered prediction approach, we found a way of automatically predicting situational awareness about important scene entities, building up from the very first layers of perception. With a feature selection approach, we could also determine what measurable features, like symmetry measures, local contrast, do actually predict well human perception. We think that this approach can actually be extended in several ways. One might be to measure more behaviorally relevant visual cues in order to predict detectability of certain human poses, so to speak, keyframes of important actions.
Wouldn't it be easier just to get rid of the human? Where do you put your chips? A fully automated driving or smarter and smarter advanced driver assistance systems?
I would say on both. I think successful fully automated driving is a requirement for the next generation of versatile driver assistance systems. It will drive a lot of innovations in this field. And as long as assistance systems want to actively only assist the human driver, they still need to be cooperative and understand the driver, his first state, and many other aspects. Think of it as a perfect co-pilot that is able to understand fully your behavior and is able to determine deviations from your normal driving behavior in all driving situations. But as somebody else said, autonomous driving will not just be there someday. It will be a complex, I think, transition that not takes only the effort of engineers, but a much larger interdisciplinary effort.
Yes. Very well. We now need to make a very short break. We will be back in no time with Professor Cristobal Curio. Stay tuned.
Hello again. We are running a little survey to our followers. You can find the link in this episode's post. It's a 2-minute survey that will give us golden information for the improvement of this publication. Can you please check it out at itsp.cicei.com? Thank you so much. Let's get back now to our today's interview.
We are back with Professor Cristobal Curio talking about how the machine can predict what's in human heads. Cristobal, also back in 2013, you published another work at the IV 2013 conference in Australia titled Monocular Car Viewpoint Estimation with Circular Regression Forests. I understand you use that machine learning technique to estimate based on vision what is perceiving each vehicle in the system. Is that correct?
Well, yes, that's correct. This work on monocular vision is actually inspired by brain research dating back to the perception work of Professor Heinrich Bülthoff on learning the appearance of 3D paper clips and how generalization fields are built up for the 2D recognition of paper clips at unknown poses, so to speak, orientations. Paper clips do not occur in nature in such a way, but could be representative for everyday objects like cars in our case. The learning principle to encode the appearance of a car under our viewpoints is similar to those paperclip scenarios, though they have been studied only in front of a uniform background. In our work, monocular car viewpoint estimation with circular regression forests, done with my former PhD student Christian Hertwig, we wanted to account for the fact that perception is largely ambiguous, like in robotics localization in mazes, and that with viewpoint estimation we are facing a continuous estimation problem that we wanted to solve with regression. One problem with regression was that we have a bias, since orientation is a modular circular variable. This we approached by modeling a density function over the circular variable and integrated that in our regression framework. The multimodal ambiguous state space for orientation we actually expressed through a regression function forest and by maintaining a sample-based representation of a hypothesis space of viewpoint orientations. I think this was a pretty nice bio-inspired approach that did not exist before. We finally embedded this estimation approach into an overall dynamic state space of orientation tracking, regression to 3D car midpoints, and monocular ego motion stabilization. With this framework, we could finally show that the overall monocular and learning-based system was able to efficiently initialize object tracks and consistently track them over long periods of time. Coming back to human pose estimation, I think it is worth to consider we might multimodally encode ambiguous information about how we perceive the world in our heads. This is something that might play a role when considering again our abilities to judge certain properties of objects. For example, in computer vision, there is this known ambiguity of judging whether a person is facing frontwards or backwards, and other key pose ambiguities might exist, for example, which of the two legs is currently in front, looking at persons from the side. That again determines the ability to predict and track the turning maneuver of a pedestrian, and so on. I think the human visual system and technical systems that try to emulate human vision functions do share a lot of properties, and the knowledge about the similarities can actually be exploited.
Thinking of the Trivedi's classical concept, looking out, looking in, Wouldn't it be sharper to look into each vehicle, into each driver's eyes, and then telling the infrastructure in a more connected vehicle fashion instead of your autonomous vehicle approach? What do you think?
Well, so far, I did not realize that I'm pursuing an autonomous vehicle approach. I think Warren Trivedi has stimulated a large amount of research with this concept of looking out, looking in, especially in promoting research on observing the driver's state. I want to extend this idea even further. I think not only the physical state space of a car, but also these discussed social cues of the drivers could be promising future content for cognitive models that can be communicated among cars and, as you suggest, in a connected vehicle fashion. Again, cars might become social entities that can communicate valuable, safety-relevant information. We are thinking actually already one step ahead. In our own work that I am conducting with my former PhD student Martin Breit and together with Professor Heinrich Wildhoff, we are already considering analyzing facial expressions and 3D facial head pose that could be the next V2X content that could be communicated among cars and the infrastructure. As a matter of fact, we will never get rid of the human driver, I think, unless we have fully implemented something like fully autonomous cars. Also, for a potential transition phase, I think we could largely benefit from such developments.
Cristobal, can you please talk to us about your future research plans? Could you share with us what's on your desktop now?
Yes. Well, it is my deep intention to promote and perform research that is devoted to the understanding of signal processing in both man and machines for the design of adaptive or human-centered computing systems. In the future, I see a large potential in further integrating or in the integration of computer science and cognitive sciences to develop effective and adaptive human-machine interfaces that are able to operate in challenging environments and be assistive systems to which also the automotive safety applications belong. I very much believe that only principles of learning, especially that of self-organizations, will contribute in some of the discussed domains from today to achieve challenging goals. With many new tools now available that allow to assess the behavior of humans in more unconstrained environments, the user of the human-centered assistance system can take on a new role, being able to provide implicit feedback during the usage and during system operation. Through a large spectrum of natural user responses, including affective signatures like emotions, a human-centered assistance system could take over the role of an active learner receiving natural user feedback. I hope that our current research opens a new window to personal human-calibrated cognitive models serving as building blocks in complex systems. Such and similar approaches look promising, I think, suggesting a methodology of calibrating and designing in human factors into effective HMIs. An interesting future direction will be to further incorporate individual personal factors like demographics facts, but also individual impairments, like, for example, visual impairments. Learning approaches such as the detectability concept I briefly discussed with you today might offer an important brick in a bigger learning framework. It will certainly not be a simple task to consider all these factors. I think the continuing transfer and application of new methods will certainly help, but will always face the fact that the most fundamental principle of brain function with its inherent designation to change. A prominent example developers have to face currently are, for example, adaptation after effects during sensory motor control processes like shared control. It thus looks promising, in my opinion, that further research on adaptive system design in a human-centered context is at core and can enable this transition through, I think, lifelong learning between man and machines in the future.
Thank you, Cristobal. That's all the time we had for today. Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for taking some time out from your busy schedule. We really appreciate it. Goodbye.
Thank you a lot, Mariam. I appreciate talking to you too. Goodbye.
Very well, we are now reaching the end of this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We always try to do better, and that's why we need you to collaborate with us by doing that little survey. You will find the link in this post website at itsp.ciceei.com. Thank you. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. Website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria in Spain. Soundtrack developed by Rubicon. Audio edition, post-production and dissemination by the Institute of Cybernetics at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the IEEE ITS Society. We'll be back soon bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening. Drive safe.